It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Tragic breaking news now in the national lead. Authorities in Tennessee say that three people have been killed in the wildfire scorching parts of the Great Smoky Mountains. CNN correspondent Nick Valencia is live for us in Gatlinburg. Nick, why did this fire move so quickly?
Jake, this fire intensified with the help of low humidity and hurricane force winds, winds up to 80 miles per hour. Firefighters are continuing to battle some of these flames. It doesn't translate over that camera, but here in Gatlinburg, smoke is really filled the air. The mayor of this small town says nearly half of it has been affected.
Three burn victims are now in critical condition. A drought and hurricane force winds fueled the flames overnight and spread embers.
Those high winds were knocking down trees. Those trees were hitting power lines and they were falling on this very dry, extreme drought-like condition, and everything was catching on fire.
Thousands forced to evacuate, many taking shelter at evacuation centers. Some had to abandon their pets because they simply didn't have enough time. Others had to drive straight through the flames because it was the only way out. Now all they can do is wait to see, and in many cases, this is what they'll come home to. Destruction, gutted buildings, piles of debris, all still smoking.
What a difficult 24 hours that our community has faced.
This city really has been through a lot. If we could offer our viewers any good news, it's that downtown Gatlinburg remains intact. Local and state officials, however, still pleading for federal funding. As for those who have been evacuated, they're being told at least 2 to 5 days before they can go back to assess the
damage. All right. Well, that's CNN fading from us. It's not a laughing matter. Of course, all those fires in Tennessee, I don't know if any of you are near them, but we just wanted to recognize that our brothers and sisters in Tennessee are going through some really hard times. You know, there was an interesting video on Fox this morning, perhaps you saw it, of a man and his son driving through their neighborhood. And it's a long video, and it shows the fire, like they're having to, they're looking for, at least what I read was they are looking for their the wife and daughter of the family. And so they're driving through, much of it, they're driving through the fire. They talk about accelerating, and it's very, very frightening. You know, you forget, you know, how frightening fire is, because with modern buildings and all the things the advantages we have now, most of us have never lived through a fire. It used to be so common. Nevertheless, the people of Tennessee are finding out how dreadful it is. I think Dollywood has been shut down. People evacuated. And, you know, according to that report, now some lives have been lost. 14,000 people are forced to evacuate. So anyway, our hearts and our prayers go out to the people of Tennessee right now. And for all those families who are suffering and just the fears, things we'll never hear about because we don't live in proximity. Meanwhile, so much is happening in Washington. And did I say this is Sandy Rios in the morning? I forgot to say that part. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. Well, last night, Fox was talking to us, and this morning, too, about all the nominations. We are expecting lots to be announced this week, and so that's going to be the focus of a lot of our discussion. Peter Ducey reports on the possible pick for Treasury. Let's listen.
Two nominations for cabinet secretaries were made today as well. First came Congressman Tom Price, the pick to run HHS and help the incoming administration come up with an Obamacare replacement. Then came the nomination of Elaine Chao to serve as transportation secretary. She's been labor secretary before and is married to one of Trump's key partners on the Hill, Senator Mitch McConnell.
I've heard rumors that there should be an outstanding appointment announced later today. So someone actually asked Stu, if I was going to recuse myself, let me be quite clear. I will not be recusing myself.
Also today on Capitol Hill, Mr. Trump's Attorney General nominee, Senator Jeff Sessions, found out that he may be on the job the day the next president takes over because his confirmation hearings will happen before Mr. Trump is sworn in.
We would expect this hearing to be before the inauguration for the reason that has been done in the past.
And Democrats looking at these nominees don't foresee any big speed bumps.
You look at Sessions, Elaine Chao, and Price today, and those are people, I think, that are not going to have trouble with getting up on the Hill, getting Senate confirmation, or going through the process.
All right, well, that wasn't the right clip, but that's all right. We'll talk about those people. Because I do want to talk about Elaine Chao. She's the wife of Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate. And, Elaine was labor secretary under George W. Bush, and she was a former assistant transportation secretary. In just doing a little research about this and talking to people in the know, I've actually met Elaine, but that doesn't mean I know what her policies were. The description that I've heard is that she was the most conservative person on the cabinet in George W. Bush's presidency. So they said that she had a very, I'm hearing that she had a very winsome way about her, and yet she did some really effective things. And she's going to be overseeing some, this is a big appointment. This is huge because she's going to be overseeing, you know, Donald Trump wants to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure. Well, that's transportation. It's highways and railroads and airplanes, airline regulations, all of that, pipelines, piers, ports, you know. So this is a huge job, and from all accounts, Elaine Chao is a good choice. I initially had my reservations because I'm personally not a fan of Senator Mitch McConnell because I think he's done tremendous damage by his lack of action. But I have to say, thinking about this and knowing more about Mrs. Chao and Mrs. McConnell, Elaine Chao, whatever she calls by. By the way, she was born in China, came over here, I think, when she was 6 years old. And she's a very gracious person, I can tell you that. She's just lovely, very humble, but obviously gets the job done. But the thing that makes, to me, as I assess this appointment, I think, you know, this is actually a brilliant appointment because she's a woman, she's a minority. She's a strong, she's a conservative, at least by calculating and measuring among others. And she is married to Mitch McConnell, who Donald Trump is going to need as he presses on this very aggressive agenda that he has in mind. And so Elaine Chao. The other person mentioned in that was Dr. Tom Price. We mentioned that yesterday. He's been nominated to be Health and Human Services Secretary. Now, here's the thing. Just to put this in context, Health and Human Services is the organization that forced like Little Sisters of the Poor and other religious organizations to provide abortion coverage or contraception coverage. Health and Human Services is over a ton of different things. Tom Price is, of course, is a strong opponent of Obamacare. He's been against Obamacare since before it was even implemented. And as I said yesterday, I've interviewed him more than once on this. He is, he's a surgeon. I can't remember at this moment his specialty, but he knows what he's talking about. He's from Georgia. And so that, you know, has to be a good pick. It just does, because we know where his passion is, and it is on replacing and doing away with Obamacare. And as a matter of fact, this is one of the first positive things I've said about this sitting Congress in a long time, so prepare yourselves. It looks as though congressional Republicans are considering a lightning strike rollback of Obamacare during the first 100 days of Donald Trump's time in office. And they're planning to use what's called reconciliation. I'm not going to go into that. It's a budget procedure where they could gut much of it. I don't exactly know the extent. I know they want to repeal and replace it, but they have to have a plan in place. Dr. Price actually has a plan, a detailed plan. So maybe that's what they'll go for. I don't know, but at least they're talking about that. At least it looks like they may actually do something about that. And I'm thrilled about that. And I'm sure you are too. You know, I just got a call from one of my best friends in Chicago yesterday morning, early, like when I was preparing for the show. It was probably 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe earlier. And he is suddenly facing quadruple bypass surgery. He has Obamacare because he has Obamacare. So he can't go to his heart surgeon. He has had heart problems before. He can't go to his heart specialist. He has to go to somebody different. The somebody different couldn't see him for weeks. And so they just gave him an EKG. It came out normal. But then he started a couple of days ago really feeling like he was in trouble. So he goes to the hospital. They admit him immediately. And he's been in intensive care ever since. He has to have quadruple bypass surgery Friday morning. My point is that now he's worried sick because he doesn't know about his coverage. It's just a nightmare. Obamacare has been a nightmare. And so thank God, if that's the only thing that Donald Trump manages to do, and if that's the only right thing Paul Ryan ever manages to do, and I certainly, heaven knows I don't give him, I'm always at odds with Paul Ryan, generally speaking. If he carries this off and the Republican leadership carries this off, I will be so grateful, and I know that thousands of you will be as well. By the way, John Cornyn told The Hill magazine, it's The Hill publication here in D.C., it's very popular among D.C.-centric folks, and John Cornyn is saying it's a virtual certainty that Senator Sessions and Tom Price will be confirmed. Now, let me tell you about Senator Sessions. I have not spoken about that. You know that they're trying to paint him as a racist when he was appointed for a post 30 years ago. Joe Biden was on the committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee, vetting him. He was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Alabama. He was nominated for federal judgeship by Ronald Reagan. And during this time, this is interesting. I don't have time to expand on this as much as I would like. Let me commend an article by Byron York in Washington Examiner called How Joe Biden Twisted the Case Against Jeff Sessions. By the way, we'll put that on our Facebook page because it's a good read. It's an important read. And it shows you Joe Biden has not changed a bit. And they twisted the words of the person that testified that Jeff Sessions was allegedly some sort of a racist. And when you read the actual words, you see that's not what he said at all. He praised Sessions. And they were actually very, very good friends. And if I had time, I'd read the words. But it's just a complete twisting of the facts. And yet Senator Sessions has been labeled such by Joe Biden. And Ted Kennedy came after him, too, because he was a conservative. He was an outspoken, strong, passionate conservative. This is what they do. They were doing it 30 years ago. They're doing it now. Law enforcement, by the way, endorsements are piling up for Senator Sessions. He's received at least 9 law enforcement groups in support of the senator to be the Attorney General of the United States. The Fraternal Order of Police and the AFL-CIO's International Union of Police Associations, just to name a few. All right, so then there's all this speculation, this nail-biting about Senator Sessions and immigration. He's going to be able, they are saying, to possibly choke off funding for sanctuary cities. He's got latitude over all kinds of immigration violations, deportations. He's going to be over federal prisons. You know, his reach is going to be great. And I have to tell you, you know, you've heard Senator Sessions on this show so many times. I personally think that he is just a fabulous man for this time. I have seen him go against the Senate and the Congress, the entire Congress, just fighting day after day after day, relentlessly, never giving up on the outrageous policies of the Obama administration and some of the Republican administration before that on immigration. And so it looks like he will be our Attorney General, and let me just tell you that that is really good news. Now, let me go back to Mike Emanuel. He has a report on Tom Price, Dr. Tom Price out of Georgia, and his replacement of Obamacare. Let's listen to it.
President-elect Trump has picked an orthopedic surgeon who he's hoping will be a reformer capable of fixing what is ailing our country's healthcare system. And Georgia Congressman Tom Price is being rewarded for his loyalty.
Are we ready to beat Hillary Clinton and make Donald Trump president?
On the campaign trail in the final days of the 2016 race, Price made the argument for Trump from the healthcare perspective.
The things that we all believe about healthcare, we want a system that's affordable for everybody, that's accessible for everybody, that's of the highest quality, and provides choices for patients. All of those things have been destroyed by Obamacare.
Long before the 2016 campaign, Price has been front and center about the need to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, introducing alternative plans in every Congress since 2009.
What our plan would do, and Congressman Price has led that.
I don't have a clock. My clock is not up. That's why I made that mistake.
Control of health care back to the patients and the physicians. By doing that with tax credits, selling insurance across state lines, finally getting some tort reform, expanding health savings accounts, and really taking away some of the mandates.
Price currently serves as chairman of the House Budget Committee and is a close ally of Speaker Paul Ryan. He is 62 years old, has represented the northern suburbs of Atlanta in the House for 12 years, and tried unifying the GOP behind Trump after a bruising primary back in May. With Price's nomination, the Senate Majority Leader is looking ahead.
What we intend to do is to go forward with a process after the first of the year that will begin the opportunity to repeal and replace. And so that will start shortly after we reconvene after swearing in new members.
Today, the White House press secretary tried to set the bar high for a Trump care brought forward by the president-elect and Price.
When these new ideas come forward, it's important to evaluate whether or not what impact that would have on the percentage of Americans that have health insurance. Because after all, expanding access to health care coverage is one of the principal goals of the Affordable Care Act.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the Secretary of State position. Oh, my goodness, the intrigue in this is amazing. Between Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani and David Petraeus and John Bolton, and I'm not sure about others, we're going to go to New York and talk to Ben Weingarten, who lives right there in the thick of it and has some observations, certainly about Senator Bob Corker, who's being considered also. And so we'll talk about that. It's really interesting, each and every one of them. I'll be right back, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Last Friday night, I was asked to talk on the devastating effect of pride and the positive spiritual effects of humility.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Now, humility in a true spiritual sense is realizing who I am in light of who God is, and then recognizing that I'm ultimately a servant, a body in which the Holy Spirit dwells, and I'm becoming more like Jesus as I live in His awareness and presence. Aggressive humility, aggressively taking action for the Lord, and yet living in humility, realizing that Jesus is the authority of my life, is a secret to a healthy spirit and heart. Being healthy spiritually gives rise to hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. A Bible was removed from the waiting room of a VA clinic in Athens, Ohio. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation had complained, alleging the good book had no place in a waiting room. They say the presence of a Bible on military property was a violation of the Constitution. Good housekeeping, it's okay. Good book, uh-uh. Dr. Adam Jackson had the staff conduct a search of the entire building to make sure no other Bibles were lurking about. So let's say you're in the waiting room dealing with a medical issue. Would you find greater comfort in the Bible or a back issue of People magazine? In a letter to the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, the doctor says they routinely have teams look for such material. Sounds kind of creepy to me. But now we know why the VA can't provide adequate medical care to our veterans. They're too busy rounding up contraband Bibles. I'm Todd Stearns.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Here in New York, it is supper time. That means that the other big headline of the day is about to happen, and that is Mitt Romney and the president-elect Donald Trump sitting down for supper. And Romney's not the only high-profile person who came to Midtown to talk about a high-level cabinet post today. In fact, we just heard a few minutes ago from Senator Bob Corker, who could be Romney's competition for Secretary of State.
Anybody who feels like they could further our country's national interest around the world would obviously want to talk about that and would be honored to serve in that capacity.
Senator Bob Corker campaigned with Trump this summer, and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman was once rumored to be on the VP shortlist. His visit to the president-elect's Manhattan skyscraper came just hours after a transition team official revealed advisor Kellyanne Conway had her boss's blessing to go nuclear on Mitt Romney on a handful of Sunday morning talk shows.
Kellyanne approached the president-elect before she went on the shows this weekend and asked his permission to go out there and offer her viewpoint on things. And he said, sure, you know, you've been a loyal, trusted aide, and you should be, you know, feel free to share your opinion.
Other face-to-face meetings with the incoming president today included Concerned Veterans for America CEO and Fox News contributor Pete Hegseth, House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Mike McCall of Texas, Tennessee Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, and former Vice President Dan Quayle, who said he just came by to say congrats following breakfast with fellow Hoosier Vice President-elect Mike Pence.
He's moving forward, and he's going to make America great again.
All right, so that was Peter Doocy on Fox, or a special report last night on Fox, and of course today we're expecting there to be more announcements. So fasten your seatbelts. It's a never-ending source of interest, and especially the post of Secretary of State. Now, it's interesting to me that Rudy Giuliani has made it clear that that's the position he wants, and we all know that Rudy Giuliani has been was faithfully in the Trump camp from the very beginning when it wasn't popular. So why isn't he being discussed? Why now Mitt Romney? Why John Bolton? I can understand John Bolton. Want to talk about that in a second. Bob Corker, we're going to talk about that with our next guest, and David Petraeus, all of them being interviewed, and heaven knows who else. Well, Ben Weingarten is in New York City. He is the founder and CEO of Change Up Media. He's a media consultant, a graduate of Columbia. He contributes to all kinds of publications. He's got a great mind, and so I've asked him to join us because he's just written an interesting piece on Senator Bob Corker and his pursuit of the position of Secretary of State. Good morning, Ben. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Hey, I'm going to go right for this one. Giuliani, I don't understand. It seems to me that the reports that we get on his business connections are vague. I don't understand why he's not front and center on this list.
Well, certainly the narrative that's been put forth on Rudy Giuliani by way of the New York Times and several other publications as well is by inference to try to draw a connection between Rudy Giuliani's consulting work and speeches he delivered to various entities overseas and try to draw a parallel with that of Hillary Clinton. I don't believe on the merits that it all passes muster, especially because while it's clear that Hillary Clinton was effectively, or at least created the appearance of influence peddling while a public official at the State Department and while her husband was running the Clinton Foundation, there's no such evidence on Rudy Giuliani's side. What the New York Times points to are consulting relationships with a few entities, including the government of Qatar directly, an Iranian opposition group, a Canadian company linked to the Keystone Pipeline, and then a company that, according to the Times, provides image consulting advice to Russian oligarchs. Now, any Secretary of State potential appointee should have their record scrutinized, and especially their record dealing with foreign entities, but I don't see that there's any there in the reporting that the New York Times put out. It seems like they're trying to create smoke but I'm not necessarily sure there's any fire. And clearly, there isn't necessarily any indication that if Rudy Giuliani were Secretary of State, that his past business ties would cause a conflict of interest while in office.
Well, you know, anybody that's going to have international experience is going to be doing business internationally with all kinds of people. I mean, otherwise, they really wouldn't have the qualifications to hold that office. So, you know, I've just wondered about that, Ben. I have my own theory about Kellyanne and this whole Kellyanne Conway, senior advisor to President-elect Donald Trump. That's a mouthful. I think Kellyanne, I really think that the team must be split behind the scenes there, and that Romney's appalling to them, and I think he's appalling to Donald Trump, too. I know he had dinner with him again last night, but I don't think he wants Mitt Romney to be a Secretary of State, and I think he's looking for cover with Reince Priebus and Mike Pence, too. A reason not to appoint Mitt Romney. That's my speculation on it. I don't think he wants to appoint Mitt Romney. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, if you look at sort of the process by which he's been interviewing all of these appointees, there's been a constant reference to Doris Kearns Goodwin, historian Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, about trying to create sort of a split cabinet, getting competing voices. You know, obviously this is probably best symbolized in terms of having Stephen Bannon versus Reince Priebus as the two people speaking into each of Donald Trump's ears. Look, it's good to have a competitive interview process. It's good to draw on a wide variety of people for input when you are the president and you are going to be managing a team that's going to have to deal with all sorts of disparate interests, not the least of them actually getting policy through Congress. All that being said, Mitt Romney would send a terrible message to those who, A, want to move beyond a progressive foreign policy or national security view. It would send a message of, look, this is a person who attacked essentially the very supporters that propelled Donald Trump into the White House. So I think that it would be a demoralizing message likely for many of Donald Trump's supporters. That said, I do think Mitt Romney wasn't wrong on many things when it came to foreign policy when he was running in 2012, including talking about the threat from Russia. And to some degree, his views on jihad. But nevertheless, I think one of the things that's been overlooked when it comes to the State Department is the fact that the State Department is the worst of the worst when it comes to progressive Wilsonian institutions when it comes to foreign policy and national security. For decades, the State Department has been on the wrong side of almost every single major issue, going back to the Cold War. Given all of that, it is a hornet's nest. And the last thing that you want in terms of an appointee going into Secretary of State is someone who is going to, you know, go along to get along and be someone who's liked by the rank and file there. I think you want someone who's adversarial, an adversarial executive in that position. And it's clear that Rudolph Giuliani's views are much more in line with those of President-elect Trump's. And so I do agree with you that it's hard to understand why his name seems to have fallen and he seems to have lost stock relative to some of the others being considered, including especially Bob Corker, who I have probably the most grave concerns about of any of the people being discussed. And yes, lastly, I will say that John Bolton, I do think, likely has the strongest resume and the strongest background of any of these folks and likely is the most qualified for the position. And I find it curious that he seems to have been kind of forgotten in the running as well.
Yeah, me too, Ben. I feel the same way. It just seems curious to me. He would have been the obvious pick. But I guess if the thing about Giuliani that I love is that when I think about the State Department, and you said this already, but the crew assembled by Mrs. Clinton, we know that it's a snake pit, just like the Justice Department is. And it's going to take somebody with a backbone, with a spine of steel, to go in there and clear that place out. And it isn't Mitt Romney. You know, I think the thing I object to him, we can talk about him criticizing Donald Trump and undermining him, trying to get him defeated by his friend who ran in Utah for a president out there to try to keep those votes, those electoral votes from Trump. We could talk about all that. But the thing that concerns me the most is the fact that he really did choke. When he was running for president, he choked. He was on the high ground in Benghazi and he choked. And so we don't need someone who cannot stay the course and doesn't have that backbone of steel. And I think he has a backbone of steel where his own concerns are at stake, but I don't think he's that principled. I really don't. So that brings us to Bob Corker, the senator from Tennessee. And I've talked about him before, but it's been a long time, Ben, and your article reminded me of our concerns. Tell us what yours are about Bob Corker being Secretary of State.
I'd love to jump into Bob Corker. And let me just say also, Sandy, just to highlight your point, because it's a great one, Mitt Romney's Me Too performance in that foreign policy debate against Barack Obama tells you all you need to know about why all of us should be concerned about a potential Mitt Romney Secretary of State. Now, moving to Bob Corker, my grave concerns around Bob Corker and why I wrote this article for Conservative Review, Corker's complicity in Iran deal disqualifies him for Secretary of State, is the fact that Bob Corker was the leading Republican in the Senate. He runs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and chairs it. Corker essentially wrote the legislation that allowed for Barack Obama to have the easiest passage of what was in effect a treaty with Iran. And what Corker did was literally turn the Senate's treaty ratification power on its head, where Barack Obama should have been required to get supermajority, two-thirds support of the Senate for his Iran deal. Instead, Bob Corker wrote a bill which gave Congress supposedly the ability to review the Iran deal's terms over a 30 to 60 day period, but would have required two-thirds opposition to the Iran deal. In other words, flipping the Senate's responsibility on its head. And there was no way that there would have been two-thirds opposition to the deal, given the number of senators who were Democrats and who would support the Iran deal. So Bob Corker tried to look tough by creating this review authority in the Senate, but what he in reality did was undermine those who would have opposed the Iran deal, who would have rejected it, who would have not given up a thumbs vote. Instead, he required a thumbs down vote rather than a thumbs up vote, all while acting as if he was a staunch opponent of the deal, and he helped pass it. And let's just point out as well that it isn't just that he helped, in effect, the Iran deal pass while claiming that he was opposing it. The other related bigger problem here is that in turning the Senate's power on its head, he completely undermined checks and balances in the U.S. Senate. And subsequently, Barack Obama has sought to go around the U.S. Senate when it comes to foreign agreements, including the comprehensive test treaty ban when it comes to nuclear weapons. So not only did Corker do grave damage in helping aid, abet, and enable the world's leading state sponsor of jihad in Iran by helping pass the Iran bill in effect, but he also undermined Senate oversight powers when it comes to foreign treaties that a president negotiates. And the ramifications of that are grave and massive. And so how someone who could have done all that, and this is just on the Iran deal alone, when President-elect Trump has claimed opposition to the Iran deal and sought to either shred it or significantly amend it, yet put someone who is responsible for its passage at the top of the State Department, to me is mind-boggling, and it would undermine what President-elect Trump has said he advocates for and wants. So I think that Corker would be a terrible choice for Secretary of State merely on the basis of his involvement and complicity in the Iran deal alone.
And Ben, I have to add, it isn't as though he did this without knowledge, because I remember during that time, just myself on this show, and I know it was talked about ad nauseum on Fox, I saw Bob Corker go in the air and actually lie about what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. And I'm going to borrow the words of a mutual friend of ours, Andy McCarthy, who says, this is hard to explain, it's hard to repeat, but this is what how Andy puts it. To summarize, the Constitution puts the onus on the president to find 67 Senate votes to approve an international agreement, making it virtually impossible to ratify an ill-advised deal. The Corker bill puts the onus on Congress to muster 67 votes to block an agreement. And so Bob Corker knew exactly what he was doing. I heard him talk on television about feigning how against this Iran deal he was when he knew full well that he was implementing its, and he did it. This was during the height of when we were talking about every day almost how bad the Iran deal, and it was imminent. So he knew what he was doing, and I'm with you, Ben. I just think it would be a terrible thing to appoint him. I don't know whose idea it is. It makes you wonder what advisors are whispering Bob Corker's name in President-elect Donald Trump's ear.
Yeah, the only rationale that I could possibly see is that somehow Corker would have an easier appointment process than some of the others because he's been in the Senate for a long time. He's well-liked there. He has a senior position in the Foreign Affairs Committee. But that is by no means a necessary or sufficient, or certainly not a sufficient standard for picking the Secretary of State. And by the way, this is not even to go into any of the lack of conservative bona fides that one would see if they went into Bob Corker's record. And so I think, you know, again, when it comes to Secretary of State, you need someone who is an executive who is going to be able to deal with an institution, a bureaucracy, with thousands of progressive, internationalist, Wilsonian types who are opposed to conservatives on all manner of positions, whether it comes to Israel, whether it comes to whether or not we should back quote-unquote good jihadis in all of these proxy wars between Sunni and Shia throughout the region, when it comes to what we should do with Russia, China, North Korea. On all of these issues, the State Department has been universally wrong for decades. And so the notion that you're going to put someone else in that position who is going to go along to get along, who is not going to make a clean break and put forth a national interest-oriented policy which looks at our enemies with clear eyes and soberly, and that, in effect, basically parallels Donald Trump in terms of throwing a ratchet into the bipartisan foreign affairs establishment. I have grave concerns about that, and it would be a real loss of an opportunity for the country when we don't get too many opportunities to fundamentally shake up these institutions.
Ben, I'm totally with you. Ben Weingartner, Conservative Review is the host of his article. We're going to put this on our Facebook page. It's Corker's Complicity in the Iran Deal Disqualifies Him for Secretary of State. Ben, thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you soon.
Sandy, thanks for having me.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your healthcare with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of healthcare. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your healthcare forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing healthcare for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org, healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
The holidays, a time to relax and to reflect with gratitude on the blessings in our lives. But for those living on the streets, it's just another reminder of their struggle to survive. In the November edition of the AFA Journal, you'll learn how you can help those who've fallen on hard times. And there's much you can do to help throughout the year. Sign up for a free one-year subscription at afajournal.org.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster. a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Among Barack Obama's most toxic legacies is his campaign to shrink America's prison population by turning loose many thousands of convicted felons. Watch for his already record-setting numbers of prisoners granted clemency, pardons, or commuted sentences to grow even larger in the remaining weeks of this presidency. Surely, though, even a commander-in-chief capable of such reckless disregard for public safety would not release one of the nation's most notorious, murderous, and unrepentant terrorists. Unfortunately, it appears Mr. Obama is actively considering doing just that by commuting the sentence of Oscar Lopez Rivera, a leader of the Puerto Rican terror group known as the FALN. Fortunately, dozens of family members of Lopez Rivera's victims and retired law enforcement personnel involved with his case wrote the president yesterday strongly recommending against unleashing this dangerous criminal on our people. They speak for all of us. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Combing through Abdul Razak Ali Artan's apartment, looking for a link to a motive, law enforcement sources tell Fox News investigators have seized two electronic devices. Meantime, one of Artan's victims recounted the attack.
It all happened so fast. I mean, say literally, at least it seemed to me, maybe the time frame is a little compressed, but it seemed to me literally within 15 to 30 seconds, I heard the shots. And it was over.
Investigators tell Fox News Artan was not on their radar prior to the attack. Born in Somalia, he traveled to the U.S. through Pakistan, arriving in 2014. He was a legal permanent resident. He excelled in school, graduating from Columbus State Community College with an associate's degree and cum laude honors in 2016. He did leave hints online. He ranted about the treatment of Muslims, particularly in Burma. He warned of sleeper cells. He praised as a hero Anwar Awlaki, the U.S.-born cleric killed by a U.S. drone strike in 2011, who has evolved into a symbol for online jihad wannabes. Earlier this month, the Department of Homeland Security warned of an increasing threat. DHS is especially concerned that terrorist-inspired individuals and homegrown violent extremists may be encouraged or inspired to target public events or places. Recent online jihadist propaganda encouraged lone wolf attacks and recommending using simple weapons like cars and knives.
There is plenty of available evidence to indicate that this individual may have been motivated by extremism and may have been motivated by a desire to carry out an act of terrorism.
Praise is being heaped on Officer Alan Harochko. Part of his training traces back to the counterterrorism technique of the Israeli Defense Force. It involves dealing with an active attacker when there's no time to wait for backup.
What we typically see with the U.S., they wait for one, they wait for two officers to show up. We don't have time. So this officer ended up employing that training and doing a fantastic job, and he is definitely the hero of this response.
Classes resume normal schedule today. The university has organized a campus unity event they're calling Buckeye Strong. Some of the students, particularly eyewitnesses, are seeking out counseling. Most of the attack victims have been discharged from the hospital. None of their injuries are life-threatening.
That was Mike Tobin from Fox News, and he is a great reporter. Mike is, I have to tell you. Now, and I thought he did a great job of just kind of covering all the bases and pointing out some things that we talked a little bit about yesterday, but I wanted to just revisit it because Reuters did a report through Yahoo News. So if that's what you're looking at for your information, now we know that, Abdul Artan was 20. He wasn't a teenager at all, by the way. Just thought I'd mention that again. And then Reuters reports, so far investigators have found no strong evidence linking Artan to other known militant individuals, cells, or groups, said two federal law enforcement officials who declined to be named because the probe was going on. But then it goes on later in the piece to say Artan on Facebook, also called Anwar Awlaki, is a U.S.-born radical cleric linked to Al-Qaeda's Yemen wing. He called him a hero. Awlaki is one of the, you heard Mike Tobin just mention him. He's one of the major recruiters, for jihadists here in the West. But according to Reuters, there's no, I just can't figure out any connection whatsoever. And then, of course, they emphasize that he, on Facebook, spoke of a boiling point and about stop the killing of Muslims in Burma. And then Reuters goes on to say violence in Myanmar, which is also known as Burma, has sent Rohingya Muslims fleeing across the border to Bangladesh amid allegations of abuses by security forces. So this is what they spend their time on. So you see, it wasn't so bad, this stabbing and running over people, because after all, those poor Muslims in Myanmar were, you know, being whatever they were, fleeing their country. So that gave him it's kind of an excuse, because he was upset. And you can understand it. That's the inference. And of course, it's just bizarre, and that's what we're dealing with, and that's what we have to change. Now, Daniel Horowitz has written an article on Conservative Review. It just came out yesterday. Will Trump and Republicans finally shut down suicidal Somali immigration? And among other things, Daniel reports that at least 40 young Somalis have been investigated for terrorism in the Minneapolis area since 2008, and some of them were convicted earlier this month. But the problem runs much deeper than a few dozen individuals. And then he goes on to say, what sort of a climate creates this? Last year, U.S. Attorney Andrew Luger warned that there is a terror recruiting problem in Minnesota among the Somali youth, and that it does not stem from overseas, but may be their best friend right here in town. Similarly, a federal judge warned earlier this month, this community needs to understand there is a jihadist cell in this community. Its tentacles spread out. And you may have seen this. I remember watching a video done by Ami Horowitz, not related to Daniel. He went to the Somali immigrants in Minneapolis's Cedar Riverside community. The reason I'm talking about this is because the Ohio State perpetrator, would-be murderer, was from the Somali community in Minnesota. So Ami Horowitz went to Minneapolis's Cedar Riverside community, and he asked all kinds of questions. I'm sure I played this on the air, of almost a dozen people he talked to, and they said repeatedly they preferred Sharia law over the Constitution and that it should be a crime to insult Muhammad. And you might remember a poll that was commissioned by the Center for Security Policy, that's Frank Gaffney's organization, last year found that 51% of Muslims living in America believe that Muslims in America should have the choice of being governed according to Sharia. You do understand, we've talked about it enough, but for those of you who may be new listeners, Sharia and the Constitution are absolutely oil and water. They do not mix. They do not match. You talk about mistreatment and abuse and murder of women under the right circumstances, of homosexuals being thrown off buildings, of hands and arms being chopped off because of theft, of beheadings. This is part of Sharia. So they're saying that they think they should be able to live here, but yet be governed by Sharia and not the Constitution. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a serious problem. That's why Muslims notoriously around the globe, not all of them, some of them manage to assimilate, but many do not. They are notoriously not assimilating because they don't take on the customs and the laws of the country in which they find themselves. Instead, they have a name for, and I can't think of it right off the top of my head, but they have a whole process wherein they move in, they populate, they become the majority, and then they take over. That is the plan. You can easily find it, and this is the plan here in America. It doesn't mean that every Muslim that you know is part of this, but they certainly are aware of it, unless they are completely secular. And most of them are not. So, also in this Center for Security Policy poll, 29% agreed that violence against those who insult Muhammad is acceptable. 25% agreed that violence against America can be justified as part of global jihad. And among males under the age of 45, that number rises to 36%. I think we should put this article also on our Facebook page this morning. Again, this is from Daniel Horowitz, and it's in Conservative Review. It's Will Trump and Republicans Finally Shut Down Suicidal Somali Immigration? Then this is an aside. This is interesting to me. This should be front page news, but we have touched on it, but I haven't really spoken about it all that much. It's this, what they call, Islamaburg in rural New York. It's a whole compound of Muslims. Let me just read this report from Fox News. An Islamist group with secretive compounds around the U.S. is arming up in anticipation of raids by the incoming Trump administration. Muslims of America, which is headquartered in Hancock, New York, and run from Pakistan by leader Sheikh Gilani, operates 22 Islamic villages around the nation. Did you know this? I know those of you that are well-read on this issue and listen to this show are familiar, but I bet one out of 50 people on the street would know anything about this. 22 Islamic villages around the nation. The compounds are legal, but Gilani has recently ordered all unarmed members to gather firearms, licenses, and hunting permits, according to the Clarion Project. Gilani believes his group will be targeted by Trump. And according to a 2007 FBI report obtained by the Clarion Project, the Muslims of America possess an infrastructure capable of planning and mounting terrorist campaigns within the U.S. and overseas. So this is why one of the many reasons why people elected Donald Trump. There's just no question about it. Even if they didn't know that detail, they sense the danger with the Somali community, with what they're seeing in North Texas, what they're seeing in Tennessee around Nashville. They are seeing a purposeful migration of Muslim groups with the aid of the federal government to sort of come in and alter, let's say, the culture and the priorities, and also create danger, I think, in these communities. So that's why these appointments on national security are so important. I think that President-elect Trump has done us a great service by appointing, you know, the general whose name escapes me in this moment. But all the I'm just thinking about Petraeus. It's not Petraeus, you've heard me talk about him a million times. He's a Secretary of Defense. He's going to do a great job. And we have a lot of other appointments that are going to have to take place, though. So I am concerned. I am concerned about some of the names I'm seeing on this list. Trump's Homeland Security and Counterterrorism Advisor is a key decision, according to this article on FoxNews.com. And here are some of the names being mentioned. Congressman Peter King from New York, and Mike McCall of Texas. And, you know, it's interesting because Peter King of New York used to be so good. Right after 9/11, he was one of the champions on what was true and what was not true about Islamic threats. And then he became a target. Do anybody remember that? They went after him with a vengeance, calling him Islamophobic. He held hearings, actually, on this. And he has flipped a switch. He is not good on this anymore. He's from New York. He should know better. And so something has changed in him, and that's why I personally don't want him to see. I don't want to see him anywhere near this national security team. And then Mike McCall of Texas, I've told you repeatedly that he is much like Senator Corker from Tennessee. Mike McCall he's the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, and yet he works with the Council on American Islamic Relations down in Texas. That's just one thing I could point to. That is the PR outlet of the Muslim Brotherhood. There are lots of things that Mike McCall does not do well. And certainly on the issue of Islam, he doesn't, obviously, I don't understand this. I think, you know, we talked about Corker sort of, you know, saying he was against the Iran deal. Meanwhile, he's passing legislation to expedite it. We talked earlier this week about some Republicans, and I mentioned Mike Pence, pretending as though they're against Common Core, but adopting something that's the very same thing by a different name. It's kind of a method that's being used by many to sort of appease the real red meat conservative base and have it both ways. And so we'll see who Trump picks. I think there'll be more announcements today. I'm sure there will. I throw my hat in the ring of Rudy Giuliani or even John Bolton. For Secretary of State. I didn't even get into General Petraeus. I actually hope to do an interview on him tomorrow, which is really very concerning. Some information you might not know has nothing to do with the affair that he had and the information that he leaked. It's something totally different that brings me pause. And so we'll talk about that tomorrow. All right, with all of that good news, this is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.